Hey, you're listening to Melissa Unscripted, and we want you to know we love our listeners. We especially love when they send us ideas for new episodes they like to hear, and when they subscribe so they don't miss an episode. So share your ideas, hit the subscribe button, and keep listening. You're listening to Melissa Unscripted. I'm your co-host, Dave Wilson, from Tiger Moth Creative. We created this podcast to bring listeners helpful perspectives on all kinds of real estate experiences, from the enlightening to the humorous. Along the way, we'll branch out on related topics, and we will definitely chase a random squirrel or two. With me always is my friend and co-host, Melissa Greer, a nationally ranked real estate agent. Hey, Melissa.
Hey, Dave.
How have you been?
I've been good. I'm busy. How have you been?
Well, the weather's turning nice, so I'm starting to feel better.
I mean, do you think it feels like summer? Like, should we go jump in the pool really quickly?
I'm always ready to jump in your pool. You sometimes heat it, so...
It's not heated right now.
I'm not jumping in.
I checked it out.
I am not jumping in. I'll go look at it.
My sweet nephew, Owen, was here for Thanksgiving. I don't know if you remember Thanksgiving. It was cold.
I don't remember Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about that later. But he jumped in that pool at least twice, and it had to be 30 degrees. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I thought, wow, but that shows some strength and stamina.
I remember when I was a kid, we went to Polly's Island, South Carolina, to the beach for Thanksgiving. I remember swimming in the ocean every single day for a good hour at least, but then we'd come inside and get around the fireplace.
But was it cold?
As a kid, it didn't matter. That's the thing. It was cold. I mean, cold. Like, you came out, and you're like, and you couldn't breathe, and you know, you were having spasms for being so cold, but it didn't matter.
Well, it's so funny. I told him, I said, you know, I'm going to jump in with you. It's fine. And I said, I'll just jump in. And I put, like, my feet in for half a second, and I'm like, nah, I don't need to prove this. There's nothing to prove here. No, I did. I'll tell you, the only time I jumped in the pool was when they finished it. It was like the end of April last year, and It wasn't, the heat wasn't working, nothing was working. It was just like cold water, and I thought, after all this work and after all this money, I'm jumping in that pool, and I did, and that was really kind of a healing thing.
Apparently, it's supposed to be really good for you.
Well, isn't that what people do, like a polar plunge?
Yeah, polar plunge. My wife did that in Finland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like ice kind of, and then they went
to a
TV.
I can't imagine in Finland it would ever be warm.
Well, I can't answer that. I think it does get a little bit warm, but I've never been there, so I'm not going to speak like I know. I do know it gets cold, though, and that's where Santa Claus is. So
Finland, you know, that isn't it close to the North Pole?
Yeah, it is. And you know, my wife and my business partner did a study abroad there from UNCG.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
See, I never did. You ever do a study abroad?
I did not.
I barely studied.
You barely did study at home.
What's the opposite of abroad? Really studied at home. Sorry. I don't know. I can't really comment on that.
Well, we've had, you know, over the multiple podcast seasons we've done, we've had people write in, people text us, and you've been asked questions too. You've kind of kept a log of. So.
We've tried to keep it. It's really gratifying and amazing. And we are grateful that people take such an interest in the podcast that they send questions, and we have not answered them. So now we thought it'd be a great idea to just spend one episode with just a Q&A.
Yeah, well, I'll be doing the Q, and you can do the A.
Unless my A's are not good, then we can switch.
Okay, okay. Then I'll just have to BS something, because right. I'll learn from you every time. I can't.
Well, I don't know that you can't BS. That might be fun.
Isn't that part of the job, though?
I think so.
I think every job when you're dealing with people.
Every job. You have to, I don't know, I always tell anyone, fake it even if you can't do it. Just, you got to be confident.
Okay, so let's start with the ones from other agents first and other people who've reached out to you asking questions, whether it's about from the podcast or from wherever you've gotten them from. But
okay, yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. How'd you feel about the 2021 market, and what's one aspect of your 2022 marketing strategy?
So the 2021 real estate market wasn't as funny as it sounded like when you were asking me that question. No,
this is because I can't talk.
Actually, the 2021 market was incredible, especially for sellers. I mean, We're plagued with a low inventory real estate market, and every house that came on the market seemed to have such a pent-up demand. So it really was a year where we had to relearn a lot of things, strategize pricing homes and how to do that, and also really fine-tune your skills as a buyer's agent because it just was so competitive. So overall, it was the busiest year we ever had, but it was also probably one of the most challenging.
Yeah, I never thought of that. That's actually a pretty good point, the, you know, having to really hone in on the buying skills, because it was, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure it was like dog eat dog.
Oh, no, we, there's some times we were in a competitive situation with 18 to 20 other offers.
Man, I wish I were that popular.
Well, Dave, you know, don't sell yourself short. But no, so we...
Was that a real estate pun?
That was, you know what? It was. It was, in many ways. But no, but it's, you know, 2022, what the market in 2021 has done is just showed us no one feels like it's going to change a whole lot. We see interest rates going up a little bit, but we also, you know, as far as the agents that I know, and of course the people who know a lot more about economics than I do, which is 100%, because as we know, I was an English major, but what it is I think that because of the bidding wars, buyers' price points are larger, so they're prepared for a pretty different payment depending on what they get. So the interest rates going up may not be affecting the market as much as people think.
Okay. What is your main source of business outside of referrals and repeat business?
Well, I'm fortunate that most of my business does come from that. But actually, we've gotten business from this podcast. We've gotten it, you know, a lot of times. I think it's important to be involved in the community and make sure, again, that everyone knows what you do for a living, but also that it's a great way to kill two birds with one stone. So you're doing great for the community, but also it ultimately does bring you business because people like to do business with people who support the community.
Yeah. And I have to say too, though, that you do a lot of work that and donate and help where people don't even know about it too.
Well,
so, and that's just because I just wanted to say, you know, it's not a business decision that you do that. It's just who you are, what you believe in.
Well,
and sometimes, and that shows people, you know, what kind of character you are.
Interesting stories. When I really got the most involved in nonprofits and doing community work was during the recession, because it's interesting, and this is very vulnerable for me to say this, but when the recession happened, after I started doing hot yoga twice a day and going to spin class and all that, and I wonder how I ever even sold a house because there just wasn't a lot of business, I went to this awesome counselor who said, your whole identity is being a realtor, and in a recession, that must not feel very good. And so at that point in time, she said, what do you do? And then I mainly wrote checks to support charities. But I decided, you know what, I need to personally get involved and do some work and actually see the causes I support, maybe put a little bit of me into it instead of just my bank account. And so at that point in time, that changed my life because I feel like it's just as important for me to do that as do real estate. That's a big part of my life.
That's awesome. Have you ever been asked to be on like a board at a nonprofit before, or have you ever been on a board?
I have been on one, and I'm actually on one now. I'm on the board of Greensboro Downtown Parks right now.
Okay.
And I love that. That's a win-win for me because I care so much about the city, and it just helps me be involved in it and also support it. But also, you know, when I'm touring people around, you learn a lot more mm-hmm. when you do that.
What's your most consistent revenue generating prospecting activity, or does that kind of go the same?
Well, I think the thing is I always say when it comes to prospecting, I have agents ask me all the time, how many hours do you prospect? And I said 24/7. I mean, any realtor, if they're really committed to doing it as a profession, you're going to prospect every time because people are going to know what you do. You market yourself, your brand's out there. So no, I mean, whether I'm going to dinner with a friend or whether I'm going to a party, you know, people are always going to come up and ask you about real estate, and I always am open to answering those questions. You know, the downside to that, and people always say, well, you never get any time off. Well, I'm so passionate about what I do. It's just a way of life for me.
Well, you have to love it.
Yeah,
you have do. To, yeah,
it's definitely a career you have to love.
Yeah, I think a lot of time owning your business is you have to be able to talk about it, be proud of it at any time. Like, I love when somebody asks me about my business.
I'll have to ask you about your business.
You should ask me someday.
I need to ask you about your business. I haven't done that.
Not my personal business.
Well, that's more interesting to me. To me.
It is.
Ask me some more. Okay. I like this.
What's your process for meeting seller clients and or buyer clients?
It's the same. I mean, the main process, and I will say this, and it's going to sound a little bit hokey, is that we just try and do the best job we can so that people will refer us to their friends, relatives, and other people they know. We just go bend over backwards and just do the best job we can, and that's really the biggest thing that we do.
How about this one? What's one book you would have every real estate agent read?
Well, I will tell you this.
I like that question, actually.
I love it. And interestingly enough, because of, as everyone knows, my ADHD, I have a very short book that is like, it's almost like a parable, and it's called The Energy Bus by John Gordon, J-O-N. Gordon, I don't know, I assume G-O-R-D-O-N. Anyway, The Energy Bus, it's a great book about how to stay positive and make sure your energy's positive, not let negativity bring you down. And it is the easiest read. And once you read that, you'll probably want to read some of his other books because they're all helpful.
Yeah.
And I think that book, not to dwell on the recession, but during the recession when I was trying to, you know, stay positive in a challenging market, I read that book and it changed my business. My business got really good because I decided that if you asked me how my business was, I would say great no matter what. And it became great. So I learned a lot from that book.
Well, that kind of ruins the next question and the last question too. How do you stay optimistic?
Well, I can tell you I avoid negative things and negative people if I can, unless they're my clients, and then I don't. But I avoid anything that would make me feel down or negative if possible. Even in my office, I tell my support team, every house we list is beautiful, every client we have is wonderful, and if there's something you don't like, don't say it in here. And I said, and you have to love me in here, but when you go home, you can do what you want. And that's what we do. So, I mean,
love me to my face.
Yeah. John Gordon has, it's called a no negativity rule. And I adopted it for my office where you just don't have it. It's really not acceptable.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure they're negative when I'm not in there.
But, that's all right. As long as it doesn't affect you, right?
Exactly.
Or them.
Yeah, it wouldn't affect them.
Okay. All right, well, those are the questions from...
Unless I'm in there. No, I'm just kidding. No, nothing much affects them. They're great.
So those are all the questions from different realtors and people who are interested in your business from the business aspect.
Okay.
This next set of questions came from potential buyers, customers, people who've listened to the podcast who aren't in the business and have questions. And... they're kind of all over the place. Not too bad, though, but they're all relative to real estate. So the first one is, what is the first step in buying a home?
The first step in buying a home, once you've contacted me, I'm just kidding.
Contact Melissa Greer. Yeah, first, answer done.
My number, we'll say it at the end of the podcast. No. You want to make sure that your realtor or that you're connected with a reputable mortgage lender and you get pre-approved so you know what your price point is, because the last thing you want to do is look at properties that are above what you want to budget for a house payment. And so that's the first thing we recommend, is make sure you understand what it takes to get a mortgage if you need one. If you don't need a mortgage, teach me how to do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I've always had one.
I have always had to have one. I'm not a baller like that.
I know.
Should I sell my current property before buying a new one?
Great question. That leads into that mortgage person. If you can qualify for both, then it is much easier to buy one without selling much easier. But if you really can't handle the
it's
new...
It's easier buying one without selling?
Oh, yeah.
So you mean if you're not having to wait? Like, explain that.
Well, the reason I think it's easier is because, think about this, if you have to sell a house to buy one, then you literally on such a tight time crunch, if you needed to do some things to your house to get it ready and stage, and it'd be easier to do it if you weren't in there, if your pets weren't in there. It's just much easier to sell a house if you've got the ability to relocate or move some things somewhere else and get your house ready. But 90% of the people can't do that.
Right.
So what we try and do is help. That's where the staging, where we help you be able to do it. But in this market, what's tough is it's so competitive for buyers that there are no contingencies anymore as far as buying something contingent on your house selling. You can buy something contingent on your house closing if it's already sold, but we have a non-refundable deposit that buyers have to put down that it comes back to them when they close, but if they don't close, it doesn't. So that's why really selling your house before you buy one has become very preferable.
Okay. And I guess you got to have a decent amount of money to put down if you're going to have both going.
You've got to have that, or you've got to be able to qualify for what used to be called a bridge loan. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes you don't owe as much on your current house and you can get an equity line that'll give you some cash.
Okay, so you can borrow against it to put a down payment.
You're right. And then the minute you sell your house, you pay all that off.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. See, I didn't know that. I'm learning now.
Oh, dang. That makes me feel good. There's not much
it takes a lot for this old brain to learn.
There's not much I can teach, Dave. So.
Whatever. one of them is, should I do a home inspection? But I think that one's almost self-explanatory.
Well, it's a good question because sellers ask it and buyers ask it. So sellers say, should we do a home inspection before we list our house? And what we say then is anything that comes up on a home inspection, you've got to be willing to either repair it or disclose it. Because once you know about it, you got to tell people. So that's one thing that would commit you to doing that.
So ignorance is bliss.
In some circumstances it is. But again, at this point in time, we try and look for red flags anyway, because, you know, technically we're responsible for disclosing anything we think could be wrong. But I think the key is if you're willing to have a home inspection as a seller, market it as pre-inspected, it's a great way to do it. On the flip side, we're in such a seller's market that buyers really don't care. And so
they're just happy to get something.
They're just happy to get something. But then I have people ask me all the time, well, if I'm buying a house and I waive inspections and everything like that, should we still have a home inspection? And I always say absolutely, because it just gives you goals on things. Like you may decide, I'm not going to redo that kitchen because I may have to do this repair. So it helps you budget what's important and what's not important.
Right. Yeah, so I heard you don't have to get a survey anymore.
So have you heard that saying, the cobbler's children have no shoes?
Yes.
Okay.
The barber's kid always has long hair.
Right. So when I bought this house that we're sitting in, I didn't get a survey because they said, you don't have to get a survey. And I was in here one day, and they were doing some construction next door, and I saw my dog over there, and I thought, what happened to my fence? Did she get through the fence? They had taken my fence down because that fence wasn't on my property. When I was doing the pool, none of it was. None of the fence I had was on my property. So I literally, no, so I regretted then. So I always recommend to people, you should get a survey. You don't have to. It's up to you. But if you want to know what your boundary lines are, and also if you have a survey in your name, if there's ever a mistake on your survey or there was a problem, you're covered with your title insurance as long as you paid for one in your name.
Okay, because when we bought our house, our agent, because I did not know what was going on, she's like, you got to have a survey. I thought it was like a law or a rule.
It used to be.
I'm glad I did, though, because it was some disputed area in our property where they had messed up a survey like back in the 60s.
Oh, the worst thing that I've ever seen happen is, and a lot of people don't think you need to do this, but I sold a brand new house, and they had what they call a foundation survey that the builder had done when they were starting construction. And most people, I'd say it's 50-50, people think, well, I don't need to get a survey. It's brand new. So I told the person, I said, I just always recommend you get one. Part of that house was built in a drainage easement that was, so it was worked out, but it wouldn't have been for that person if we hadn't gotten a survey.
Right.
So it did delay the closing, but it was in the buyer's best interest that we did. So that's the thing, is you just never know.
Our last neighbors didn't get one, and then they started running drains, like French drains, but a few of them from the gutter, they were just running out to the yard onto our property.
That's nice. That's a nice way to meet a new
neighbor.
It was
a great way. They were
welcome.
They were horrible neighbors. They're gone, thank God. Anyways, so I came up there. I'm like, hey, you can't do that. They're like, oh, no, we're looking at a Google Maps. This is mine. This is my property. I was like, no.
Yeah,
here's the survey, and this is my property. And plus, you don't need to be running your water into my property. It's running right to my foundation.
Yeah. I don't know. I would never do that. Would you?
It's just common sense. Like, don't. Like, it was, like, pointing right to my house. Like, and, you know, our house is kind of close to the line on that side. So, it was, I mean, we're talking like it would have flooded our basement.
I'm way too much of a people pleaser to do that. I just would worry that I wouldn't want to do anything that would hurt someone else.
Are real estate prices negotiable?
You know, it depends. If a house sits on the market for a while, of course, they're negotiable. In this market, most of the time, they're not.
Yeah.
Most of the time, they're not.
Yeah, I guess if you're a first-time buyer, I guess it's really weird, too, in this, because when I bought, it's like, hey, maybe we'll go in a little bit under. Yeah, yeah. They're asking a little too much. We can start under and kind of meet somewhere in between.
Right now, the question is, how much over do I need to offer? You know, most of the houses we're listing now, they sell above asking price, and some by far.
It's insane.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. And I'd say, I never thought
not in this area anyways.
No, and I never thought I'd see a market like this. But the truth is it's kind of fun. You know, there's not, keeping that positive attitude. I mean, there's, you know, it's a difficult market, and it's unlike anything we've ever done. But it just gives you another challenge and something else to learn.
It's got to be fun now and scary for the future, or is it even, or you don't even see anything scary in the future?
No, I don't see anything scary in the future at all. I'm not getting on that bus.
Yeah.
No, I really don't. I think that, especially for Greensboro, North Carolina, our area, I really think we've got industries coming here. Almost once a week you hear of a new one. We just heard Procter & Gamble's expanding their plant. You know, we've got the Boom Supersonic. We've got the Toyota battery plant. So we've got all that. I mean, all that's happening in addition to the Performing Arts Center. I mean, I just don't see Greensboro going backwards. I see it, you know, moving forward.
That's good to know. I'm glad you're optimistic about it.
That's my opinion.
Yes.
And I would think it'd be a good one to believe in.
I mean, why not, right?
Jump on my bandwagon.
Jump on your bandwagon. Yeah, all right. Sure. I'm game. Should I do a final walkthrough?
Always. And I'll tell you why.
Are they required?
No, they're not required. The only time that you wouldn't do a final walkthrough is sometimes if you give a occupancy to a seller after a closing, which was unheard of a few years ago. It was very limiting, but now buyers will do anything to get houses. So sometimes that's happened. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do one, but just keep in mind, before you purchase more than likely the biggest thing you'll ever buy, you do want to walk through and make sure there's not some plumbing leak that's fallen through the ceiling and happened. You know, there are horror stories about things that would happen, especially in the wintertime, if, say, the heat wasn't on and a pipe burst. I've done walkthroughs where you walk in on a mess. And so that's when you do have some leverage to get it fixed before you take it on. So.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me, I have a question too, because I have my in-laws, their neighbors just sold their house, and it is not in good condition. Probably needs to be condemned. What are the options like when the buyers buy that house? Because it sold for next to nothing. It's basically land property.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once a property's been condemned like that, is there any salvage, or do you have to tear down, or?
Oh, it depends. I mean, it really does depend on sometimes a house can be condemned for reasons that it doesn't mean that they're not able to be repaired. It's just they can be condemned for all sorts of reasons. But most of the time, it's rare that someone tears a house down. I mean, so it's usually, as long as it's structurally sound, and it's always, there's things that are always fixable, unless it would benefit the property more to start from scratch.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's sad when I see that, because you just always think, what happened?
Yeah.
Foreclosures make me sad, because you think to get to that point, it just had to be, you know, people went through a hard time.
Yeah.
So when you see a foreclosure, they're usually not in great condition.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. I bet it's that's a depressing way to end this.
We can't end
We cannot that. End on that.
We can't.
We cannot.
Ask me one more question.
I was going to say, let's tell a neighbor story just to have a fun one.
Okay. You and me go first?
Yeah.
Okay. So my first house I ever bought, I thought the next door neighbor, I thought it was an estate sale and they were going to put the house on the market. But actually, an auctioneer lived there with his two grown kids and his wife. I lived there for 5 years, and they all had these old cars. I mean, the whole time I was there, their yard looked like a junkyard. Their cars parked in front of my house. And they were the nicest people, but the truth is it became, and plus, I'm not saying it, but I walked out of my house the first week I lived there, and the father goes, honey, you should put a curtain up on that window in your shower. And I'm like, okay. I don't know if it was that or the cars or the debris in the backyard, but it was just always a little bit awkward for me, Dave.
One of our neighbors, they came running over to our house. Oh my gosh, we've lost our child. And like a 3-year-old. So I got out my lights and I mean, we were all out looking and we were looking through the neighborhood about to call the cops. And one of the people that were living there that, you know, like a roommate or something, I'm not exactly sure. They were a strange group, but came right out. I found her. I'm like, where was she? She's like, she was asleep in a pile of dirty laundry. Oh, it was nasty. The whole house was like full of like just piles and piles, and they had lost their child in the dirty laundry for like 30 minutes.
Is that the condemned house you're talking about?
No, that's not the condemned house. No, I have actually good neighbors now. Yeah. They moved.
That's sad.
Yeah.
Because that's sad.
Yes, it was. They were actually good parents to the kids.
They
just didn't do laundry, and their kids thought it was a great place to hide and fell asleep.
My little nephew, Nicholas, used to disappear when he was like 2 or 3 and just walk out the door and go, you know, I think it's kind of adventuresome. I like
some people were born rambling.
I like kids that get in trouble.
Yeah.
And dogs, as we know.
Yeah, kids and dogs. I like kids that get in trouble. Yeah. Not when mine, but I do. It's kind of fun sometimes. Yeah,
sometimes it's fun. You can let Rachel handle the not fun time.
Yeah, no, that's not what happens.
Well, this has been fun.
It has been fun. I hope it's been I hope it's been educational to the audience. Thank you, everybody,
for
listening.
Keep those questions coming.
Yeah, please do. I would love to get a whole nother stack of them. I actually learned a lot today.
Well, thanks, Dave.
And I thought I had known it all now that we've been doing this for so long.
Sometimes I can surprise you with new information. And sometimes I surprise myself.
Yeah, yes, I've seen that.
I've got to run now. I need to check out my office and see how negative it is in there.
Well, hopefully when you show up,
it'll
turn around. Yeah.
Fast.
All right. Cool. Yeah, thank you, everybody.
Bye. Melissa Unscripted is produced by Tiger Moth Creative, helping businesses and nonprofits leverage the power of their story. Find links and show notes at melissagreer.com, and so you'll never miss a show, subscribe to us on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And make sure you give us a good rating. That's it for now. See you next time.